Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
What I want to talk about tonight, I want to talk about the teacher-student relationship. And I particularly want to talk about my teacher, Myogen Steve Stuckey, and how he showed me what that is. How he showed me how to be a student and modeled for me how to be a teacher, I hope. Here in Humboldt, there's the most wonderful thing. I live by the fairgrounds, and I went up there today, and once a year there's a three-day-long logging conference, loggers, and it's college students from all over, from Idaho and Montana and Colorado, and they come here. They come here to Humboldt, and they do competitive logging. Which was great. These young girls are chopping wood and throwing axes. And so I was really having fun up there. But I said to my friend, you know, I think I have to be responsible. I'm giving a talk tonight. I have to go back home and work on my talk. So I went through books looking for quotes that would support my thesis. And one of them is still sitting open here. This is not always so. The books that I go through when I'm looking for quotes are Not Always So and Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And this is open to a page that says, be kind with yourself. Suzuki Roshi is speaking to us through the ages. Be kind with yourself. When I first started meditating, I didn't want to be a Zen student because Zen was so strict. Zen looked kind of mean. Zen looked like it was just full of rules, and I don't like rules. So that's how that goes. I became a Zen student because I met a true Zen teacher, and that's Myogen Steve Stuckey. Myogen and I were I had him for 20 years. When I first met him, he had a sitting group in his living room in Mill Valley. His wife and daughters had to sort of cower upstairs while we took over the downstairs. After a little while, we built a little zendo. They bought a place up in San Rafael, and there was a two-car garage in the backyard that we turned into a zendo. Things got more formal. I was really lucky. When Steve was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and he gave the talk that he was already scheduled to give, the talk that's become known as the gratitude talk, his wife Lane was there. The zendo at Green Gulch was, I think it was being renovated because the talk was in the yurt, which is a very small space. So word got around, and this yurt was packed with people who knew and loved Steve. So his wife, Lane, was there. And after he'd given his talk, I went over to Lane to say how sorry I was. And Lane, she cut me off. She said, do you know how lucky you are? And I said, yeah, I actually do. 20 years of a true teacher. Talking about teachers and students, you have to go to Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and you have to go to the talk called Control. Control. Woohoo. Because Suzuki Roshi says, to give your sheep or cow a large, spacious meadow is the way to control him. And he says, so it is with people. First, let them do what they want and watch them. This is the best policy. To ignore them is not good. That is the worst policy. The second worst is trying to control them. The best one is to watch them, just to watch them without trying to control them. That's the teacher-student relationship. That's the gift that my teacher, my true teacher, gave to me. He just watched me. As I'm very fond of saying, he always gave me enough rope to hang myself. He didn't correct me. He didn't reprimand me. And for the first, as I think about it, and it's wonderful to think about it, Steve's dead now for 10 years, which is incredible. It's already 10 years, and it's only 10 years, and he still is teaching me. So for the first many years, all I did in my relationship with him was try to impress him with what a good Zen student I was. As we continue to look at the teachings, what's freedom? How do we get free? This is the question of, well, it's one of the questions of Zen. And what all the greats say, what we have to do is learn who we are. So if I was putting all my energy into putting up an impressive front, I wasn't able to learn anything from him, and I wasn't able to accept the gift that Zazen gives us of learning who I am. And the thing is, the point is, he put up with it. He just waited, and he used me a lot. I was very busy. I was always carrying some incense or doing some darn thing. Thinking about the student-teacher relationship, I think I want to say that we each, in our Zen practice, we each can go as deeply as we want to, or perhaps as deeply as we need to. So wanting to look good, you know, I sewed a blue rakusu, and he gave me my name, and I was a big shot, and it was really pretty much fun until I couldn't keep that act up anymore. That was getting what I wanted, but what I needed was to give up, right? That's what Zen practice. There's a wonderful quote from, who is it? And it says, you know, Zazen will just, it'll just beat you up. It'll just tell you have to give in. And you have to, I'm going to say now that the essence of the teacher-student, the true teacher-student relationship, the essence is vulnerability, intimacy. It's the opposite of looking good. Maybe that's my whole talk. No, that's not my whole talk. Back to be kind with yourself. Steve, here's I've written three books, and the most recent book is a book of, as the time has gone by, and I tell the same stories about Steve over and over. I'm a very small fish in a small pond, and I'm afraid that those great teachings are going to get lost. And I thought of people coming to San Francisco Zen Center now and hearing about this guy, but not having an opportunity to be exposed to his teachings. So I put this book together, and I made it as attractive as I could in the hope that some new student wanders in the bookstore and sees it and picks it up, and these teachings can be carried forward. So here's this story, because the main thing about it, there's no Zen on a piece of paper. There's no Zen that's a concept. There's the Zen. Zen is not what Steve said to me. Zen is not in Steve's Dharma talks or his classes. Zen is in the way he behaved. That is where he taught me. So here's a story that I really love. We were at Tassajara, and Steve had, he was there in the early days. He was a student of Richard Baker. And he left Zen Center and went out into the world because he had children and he wanted to raise his children. He remained connected to Zen Center. He was on the elder council and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, what a surprise, he was the abbot. So he hadn't been living at Zen Center for 20 years, and then he was the abbot. It was really fun. He did his first Tassajara practice period in 20 years, and Kathy Early was his Jisha, and I was the Shuso, the head student. And it was really fun. It was really great. He said at the start of the practice period, he said, "Well, many of you have been here longer than I have. So if you see me doing something in the way we used to do it, and you don't do it that any way anymore, please let me know." So sitting right next to him during all that Orioki, I saw him doing something that was old school and we didn't do it anymore. So I saw my opportunity and I corrected him. I said, "You know, that thing that you're doing when you pour your water into the receiving bowl and you give it the tap, we don't do that tap anymore." And this look sort of, that was probably one of the two times in 20 years that I saw a little look of irritation. But it was just that fast. So there we were, and that is practicing that way. That's intimacy. Kathy Early, that's intimacy. So here's the story. We were having the last sesshin of the practice period. There was a woman in that practice period. As it's not unusual that there's a person in the practice period who's a problem. They're always making a fuss. They're always objecting. They're always raising their hand and saying, "Why do we have to do that?" She was just, the whole thing would have been paradise if she hadn't been there. She never stopped. It was that woman, right? She has different faces and different names, but it was that woman. So in the sesshin, at the end of the practice period, so by now we've been all practicing together for 85 days. We really know each other. She disappears. She disappeared. And I asked Steve, "Did you, what?" And he was surprised. So at Tassajara in the winter, the produce truck comes over the mountain twice a week. And apparently one day the produce truck came over and she was just so sick of all of us that she just hopped on and left. And that's, you just don't do that. Tassajara practice, you stay. I mean, that's the, who didn't want to leave? Who didn't want to hop on the produce truck? But you stay. So that was amazing. And I thought, well, finally, we're going to get some peace and quiet around here. So it's the afternoon rest period during sesshin at Tassajara. And what this means is it's completely quiet. Everyone is flat on their beds, grabbing every moment of rest available. The Shuso cabin where I was living is right across a walkway from the abbot's cabin where Steve was living. And all the walkways are gravel. Crunch, 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 crunch. So I'm in the Shuso cabin, flat. Oh, and I hear feet on the gravel. Who's out there walking around? So naturally I jump off my bed and I pull the little curtain And it's her. She's back. And she's walking right up to the abbot's cabin. And this is another thing you never do. You speak to the abbot's Jisha if you want to see the abbot. She walks right up in the dead silence and bangs on the door. So I stayed at the window watching. And he opened the door and he looked really surprised. And then he smiled and he opened the door wide and he invited her in. See, that's a Zen teacher. That's the man who walked the talk. He didn't say to me, he didn't say, oh, you should be nicer. You should love everybody. He showed me how it is to love everybody. Yeah. That was Steve. Steve was quite a loss, I have to say. It's really interesting the way that he keeps on being my teacher, even though he's not here. I'm going to say that that's because he taught me so completely. He taught me so thoroughly. The stuff that he wanted me to know, he put it into me so deeply. And when he first died, it was just missing him and knowing it was impossible. But then I began being able to say, what would Steve say? What would Steve do? And it's easy. Steve would say yes. Steve would say, be kind. Steve would say, with people, let them do what they want and watch them, right? To ignore them is not good, to try to control them. And I've had some teachers who've tried to control me. Blanche ordained me, and oh, Blanche tried to control me so hard, and it just didn't work. It was like I've had a few teachers and I've had a few husbands where you say, well, just tell me what you want me to do. Tell me who to be. And I've met people who wanted to tell me who they wanted me to be. And you can only do that for so long. And if you're a person who's yearning for freedom, as I seem to be, then you get to a point where you say, well, I wonder who I am. And this is the gift of Zazen. I heard Richard Baker say once, we put in so many flight hours on the cushion. So if you're yearning for freedom, if you're in a sitting group and you sit once a week, it's really good. You're meditating. You are a meditator. But if you're hungry for more, more is always available. Sitting every day is a really good idea. Getting in the habit of sitting. Zazen is a skill, right? You don't get to Carnegie Hall without practice. The first, when I began meditating, I was a terrible meditator. It was just awful. And when I realized, oh, I'm acquiring a skill and I don't have it yet. So the more we do it, the better we are at it. And the better we are at it, the more the magic happens. Another story I love, in the 60s, I lived in San Francisco at Bush and Laguna, and I had a neighbor who was really a pretty odd guy. And he said, that building over there is a Zen center, and a great teacher named Suzuki Roshi has just come from Japan, and you can go over there and he'll teach you Zen. I said, what is Zen? And my wacky neighbor said, it's a way to end desire. And that's why I never walked across the street to meet Suzuki Roshi. Why would I want to end desire? I was just getting good at desire. But my neighbor was wrong. It is not a way. Ending desire, I do believe, as nearly as I can tell, ending desire is impossible, right? Living with desire is quite possible if we sit, if we put in so many flight hours that we become intimate with our own minds. Oh, there you go again. And when we see those repetitive thoughts and begin to see through it. So it's not a matter of ending it, but it's a matter of not being attached to it. Not being attached to creating an image, like those first however many years with Steve, creating an image of being a, oh yes, I'm a good Zen student. It's not creating an image, it's seeing through the image. This is the freedom that's being offered to us. I still kind of wish I'd met Suzuki Roshi, but there you go. I've met him through his students, as we say. So the depth of the drop is the height of the moon. Any of us who've developed the ability to sit still for 30 minutes, what's available to us is infinite through this practice. I'm really interested in Zazen at this point in my life, really interested, really feeling like, well, I'm just really interested. You know the story about Suzuki Roshi? He's at Tassajara. And the fellow is walking behind him holding the incense, and they're going from the abbot's cabin to the Zendo. And they cross that little bridge over Kabarga Creek, and Suzuki Roshi steps and he looks down at Kabarga Creek and he disappears. And then he reassembles and they continue walking to the Zendo. You know that story? It's a good story. I asked Catherine Thanos once, I said, is that story true? And Catherine said, oh, we don't talk about those things. So I'm kind of in Zazen now. I'm just kind of seeing if I can disappear. I think that would be really nice, just to disappear. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. How would that be? That would be free. To not have to be trying to please people as I'm doing right now. I still get nervous before I'm going to give a Dharma talk, and I have to think, what is that nervousness about? Oh, yeah, you want them to like you. That is not the purpose of the Dharma talk. The purpose of the Dharma talk, someone said to me long ago, and I still believe it's true. The purpose of a Dharma talk is to encourage people to continue sitting Zazen. So maybe I've taken a little swing at that tonight. What else do I have to say? I have some in my search. This is great. Suzuki Roshi says to approach perfect practice. Would you like to approach perfect practice? Here's how you do it. There is no way other than to accept yourself. First, we have to find out who we are. And that's the small me who went to all those therapists to find out who I am. And that's good. What are the causes and conditions that led me here? Right? That's good. Oh, but there's this other self. There's this really interesting. All beings are Buddha Dharma, the interconnection of everything. There's the small self and the big self, and they're not separate. To approach perfect practice, there's no way other than to accept yourself. Who are you? Maybe better said, what are you? Kobun Chino says, self-acceptance is the hardest thing to do. If we can't accept ourselves, we're living in ignorance. Suzuki Roshi says, when you say, oh, I don't know, then you are you, and you know yourself completely. That is enlightenment. When we drop all the knowing, all the being, all the presenting, all the facade, then you are you, and you know yourself completely, and that is enlightenment. And this is me talking about Steve. I asked my Zen teacher how I could bear my past. I'd done too much harm, and too much harm had been done to me. Was I that same person now? Could I forgive her? Could I forgive them? And he answered, everything that's happened in your life has conspired to create you as you are now. Conspired. It's a big conspiracy to create you as you are now. Steve told me, accept yourself as you are, and all other questions will fall away. I think that's a pretty encouraging reason to keep sitting. Learn to accept yourself. Learn to see who you are. Learn to accept that. And all those questions, all those doubts, shame, guilt, fall away. That's what a Zen master told me. At the end of the Shuso practice period, there's this nerve-wracking ceremony. You sit up on a platform and everyone in the room, it's called Dharma combat. Everyone in the room asks you a Dharma question. They're testing your understanding. You have to memorize certain statements. And one of them talked about, you know, oh, I'm blah, 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 blah. I'm so ashamed. You know, my practice has been inadequate. I'm so ashamed. And I asked Tonto about that. I said, what's up with that? Why do I have to say that? And he said, oh, it's just Japanese. This is not a sufficient answer. So I went to Steve. I said, I've been working on shame for decades. I'm done with shame. I'm not ashamed. I've worked really hard. I don't want to say that. So Steve just watched me. And he came back a day or two later. And he said, how would you like to say you've been humbled? Yeah, I've been humbled. So that's how he was with me. He met me where I was. He gave me what I needed. I thought Steve and I were revolutionizing the Shuso ceremony. But every Shuso ceremony I've been to since, they're all ashamed. So that was Steve and me. What more do I have to say to you? I don't have to say anything, do I? Oh, I'll tell you this story. It's my current favorite story. So actually there was in my introduction, what I did was I was a hospice chaplain, and that meant I went into people's homes, wherever they lived. It might be a care home, it might be a private home. So now I'm living the dream because I'm retired, so I'm a hospice volunteer, which means I don't have to go to any meetings. So I still have one person who I go and see. So I'm going to see my lady. And it's not her, but on the way to her, there's this long hallway, and it's completely empty, except there's this lady in the door to her room, and she's leaning on her walker, and she's calling out, hello? Hello? So I go up to her and I say, "How you doing?" She asked me what time it was. I said it was 2:30, and she punched her watch. And this is how I realized she was blind. Her watch said
8:32 p.m.
Her watch said, "Oh, that was my watch." Her watch said, I said it's 2:30. Her watch said it's 5:30. I didn't know my watch did that. So our watches didn't agree. So we went in her room and we sat down to talk this over. She asked me again, "What time is it?" I said, "Now it's 2:38. She punched her watch and her watch said it's 5:38. Then the good part is she calls out, "Hey, Alexa, what time is it?" And Alexa agreed with me. Alexa said, "It's 2:38. So that lady, I love that lady, because that's all I'm doing. I'm standing, leaning on my walker, calling out, "Hello, hello." One of the mysteries of doing the hospice work, I was always the same person. I was always doing the same thing, walking into a stranger. "My name's Ren, I'm the chaplain, how you doing?" And sometimes they said, "Go away." A lot of the time they tried to impress me with how spiritual they were. And every once in a while, it was that magic thing that happens of, "Oh, there you are. Oh, hi, I'm so glad you're here." That magic connection. So the next time you hear someone calling, "Hello, hello," no matter how they're saying it, if you can respond, if you can be the person. Excuse me for bragging, but I looked up on my cell phone the make and model of her watch and I reset it so it said the right time. See, I did something in that visit. But it's the hello. We are all calling, and Suzuki Roshi says the worst thing that we can do with other people is ignore them. Second worst, try to control them. The best thing is just watch them. Just say, "Oh, you're here. Oh, you do exist. I see you. I hear you." That's how it seems to me. And I'll say to you, if you can find a teacher who does that for you, could be a true teacher, watch their Zen. Yvonne Rand says, just don't even think the word teacher for 2 years. Yvonne's very strict. Just watch them, watch what they do. It's not what they say, it's what they do. It was suggested to me in this talk that I talk about the teacher-student relationship, and I think it's partly because of the Steve book, but I think it's partly too because Les Kay has stepped down, and there you are. And that's different. The teachers who head up these regional centers, oh, my hat is off to those people, because that is a tough job, because you're the spiritual leader. You're the one who needs to hear hello, but you're the administrator, you're the fundraiser, you're the receiver of all the projections. Those are tough jobs. So I don't know how you're all doing in your hunt for someone, but this is a very, where Zen is in America right now is we're really in an interesting place. There are a lot of little centers that are looking for the teachers, as the first generation teachers have left, and good luck to you on that. Zen's a team sport, but you're the one who needs to wake up. You're the one who needs to save all beings. It's not the center. This is not what centers are for. The center is just to give you a place to sit, so you can wake up and be useful in this life. Right? That's not so hard. That's right. That's right. I'm going to stop talking, and we have plenty of time for question and answers, criticism. Thank you very much. Who in Canindo is the priest who did service? I know it's you, but what's your name? I've told my students they have to give me a nickel every time I say, you have to unmute yourself. I'm quite rich.
Do you hear me now?
I do.
Okay, my name is Lee Marcello. I haven't met you before, and I'm so glad to meet you tonight.
Hi, Lee. I'm very happy to
Hi.
meet you. I like to know a whole bunch of people. We're this big family, it turns out, and I'm so happy to be a part of it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lee. Nothing? Want to go to tea and cookies early?
Thank you so much for your talk. A number of things you said really resonated for me, but most of all, your story about living just down the street from Suzuki Roshi and not going to see him. In the late 60s, I was a student at Berkeley. I went to a talk by Paul Reps, who wrote Zen Mind, who wrote Zen Flesh, Zen Bones. And I thought that sounded pretty interesting, but as I read the stories, I got this impression, which is very much like what you were saying, that Zen is pretty tough stuff. You know, I got the feeling that if I really tried to go and get involved in Zen, that I'd be sitting out in the rain in Tongariro for a week, and then they'd let me inside and beat me with sticks.
That's it. It's true.
Instead, I violated the rule you said about you can't find Zen on a piece of paper. I just read about Zen. I collected books about Zen. I read and read and read about it. Just like you would read about a subject in school. I was a good student, so I wanted to be a student of Zen, so I read and read and read and read.
Yeah.
Finally, I took a course, university course in Zen, Stanford University. It was taught by this local fellow named Les Kay. He said, "Well, why don't you just come on by Canindo and see what Zen is really like?" And that was 20 years ago.
Great.
And so
Perfect.
a lot of what you said was really very resonant for me. So thank you very much.
Yeah, that's a great story. The bird of Zen has two wings. Wisdom is one. And I guess we can get wisdom from a book, but the other one is compassion, and the only way we develop that wing is by letting our hearts be broken open on the cushion. Candy Lo, I see your little hand.
Hi, nice to meet you. I was wondering how you got interested in hospice work and how that correlates with your Zen practice.
Are you working in hospice?
I am not. Well, how can I say it? I have a couple of friends who are at the end of life, and I've been visiting them on a regular basis.
Great.
But other than that, I have no association with anybody.
Great. So when I moved into San Francisco Zen Center, I thought that was the last stop. By then I had taken the red pill or the blue pill so completely, whichever that pill is, that I thought that would be it for the rest of my life. And after 7 years, the people at Zen Center and I agreed that we'd had just about enough of each other, so I had to move out. And by that time, I was already collecting Social Security. I think I was 66, something like that. I had no money. I couldn't go back to sales. I needed to do something to support myself. And most importantly, I was a priest, and I was living by vow. I was the vow was pushing me. So what was I going to do? Be a chaplain. Great. It's a great way to live the vow in the world. So I trained for a year. You do a one-year hospital residency. Before that, I did the Buddhist, which I really recommend, the Buddhist chaplaincy training out of the Saadi Center with Gil Fronsdahl. It's a year long, you go once a month. And then I was a chaplain. And then I was, then I began learning how to be a chaplain, how to do that. It was great work. It was great priest training. It was perfect work for me. And I wrote a book about that that I really like. It's called Love and Fear. And I'm easy to find. I'm all over the internet. When I was still around Zen Center, so many people had the idea, oh, I'd love to be a chaplain. And they'd all say, how do you do it? You know, how do you get trained? How do you get a job? What is it? So one of the purposes of writing that book was to answer that question. I don't know how old you are, but after a certain age, yeah, our friends need us. Our friends, wow, people our age begin to die and they need us. And this is great work. I'll tell you one thing. Since we don't turn away, we're training for our own death, guaranteed. I helped my mom when she was dying, and she was so afraid of death that she died screaming. And I thought, maybe if I got a little friendlier with death, I wouldn't have to die that way, since it's apparently inevitable. So yeah, good for you, Candy Lowe, showing up for your friends. Not turning away, letting your heart be broken. It's nice to meet you. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
I see my friend Philip. Philip, how are you doing? Philip, you're supposed to send me my Okesa back. Do you want to unmute yourself and have a conversation, or are you going to remain silent? I loaned Philip one of my black Okesas.
Thank you. I could never get my coronal, is it the sitting room? My skills in sewing have deteriorated over the decades. And I was very confident that I could do the rest with the encouragement of your Okesa. And so I've been taking care of it and feeling the kinds of emotions that are not Zen approved.
In that case, I insist you keep the Okesa. Once Mel Weitzman said about ordination, he said, it's like you walk into a haberdashery, it's such a Mel word, a haberdashery, and a whole shelf of clothes fall on you. So yes, fabric management is a big part of it. It's good to see you, Philip. Sorry for putting you on the spot, but I'm happy to see you always.
It's such a beautiful Okesa. It's hard to describe this, how lovingly and skillfully it was put together. And I keep thinking that next week I'll be able to put it on. So, but I will send it back and thank you for.
No, don't you dare. No. It sounds like that Okesa is having a really good time there with you. You keep it there for a while.
Thank you so much for your talk. It's a deep, Les talked earlier this evening. Mm. Every day's in. And, there's something about how it's like a painting that's used to be representational, but is things, the edges are blurred, and there's something else coming out, the emotions, and a lot of deep stuff tonight in both your talks.
Nice. Yeah. It's a bottomless practice, isn't it? Which is so exciting. Just, it never ends. So Philip and I both sit with Everyday Zen. I've been practicing with Norman and Everyday Zen for a long time. Norman has a big welcoming umbrella. It's great. Thank you, Philip. Thanks for letting me put you on the spot. Teresa, hi.
Hi, Ranxin. Thank you for your talk. I wanted to say thank you because I discovered you by chance. Last year, I registered for the Everyday Zen practice period online, and I think you were part of it, and there was the possibility of having practice with a discussion with you. But since I didn't know who you were, I checked online, and I listened to an interview you gave, where you, a long interview for an hour, I think, interview where you discussed your life and, you know, how that you were in a very difficult situation when you started practicing Zen. And it really inspired me, you know, the story of your life and how sincere you were and how difficult your life was before you started practicing Zazen, and how you said that literally, I think if I remember correctly, that Zen practice saved your life, quite literally.
Quite literally.
So, you know, thank you. I guess you never know who you're going to inspire, and you inspire me, and thank you for your honesty and discussing, you know. But very difficult things in your life in a very open way, and I'm sure that inspires other people too. And I received the book. It was very easy to read. I appreciated that it has big letters because my eyes are not so sharp anymore. So. And there are so many, it's a short book, but there are so many good stories. I love when Ami again told you that story about that you said that you were feeling like a princess, and he said, oh, great. Now I want you to feel like a queen. There's so much love in your yeah. relationship. It's very inspiring. And yeah, and thank you also for saying the role of a Zen teacher is to encourage people to keep sitting Zazen, because I've been thinking a lot about encouragement, you know, lately, about how the people who came before us, there's so much encouragement, so many things that they said, just, you know, encouraging us to sit and to keep going.
Keep going, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'll ask a question. Since you mentioned the role of, you know, Zen teachers like Les, you know, the huge role they played in, you know, opening Zen centers and wearing several hats. And since Canon Do is looking for a teacher now, first it seems that there are not many available.
Yeah.
But I wonder if in general you have any some advice for this period when, you know, Canon Do is searching for a teacher. And thank you very much. Thank you.
I maybe, good luck. Zen Center just packed up all the senior people and moved them into the country, so they're not available. There's a the new generation, maybe they're hungry. I was, many, many years ago, I went to an Episcopalian church and wonderful, wonderful priest. That's why I was there. He gave wonderful sermons, and then he got elevated. He became the Bishop of Hawaii. He left. So I was on the search committee, and we went around and we looked at all of these Episcopalian priests. Wow, it was like a banquet. And that there was this guy, he was great. And we had him, oh yeah, and he came and he was our new priest. And it was just terrible. Everybody left, everybody hated him. He changed everything. He changed everything. So the advice I have for you is you're going to find someone, and I've already said, I think, find someone who's kind. Find someone who wants you to be who you are. Find someone who's not coming in to prove how great they are and exert their will, and then still be ready for the immense change. Because whoever's coming in, they're not going to be less K. Yeah, yeah, it's tough. Dan Geiger, I see your little yellow hand. And I recognize you. Do you sit with Everyday Zen too? Is that where I know you from?
Just recently, yeah. Possibly. Yes, yes. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. How were you all tonight on the Everyday Zen call?
No, I don't do Wednesdays because I have my own sitting group on Wednesdays.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I made a cameo tonight, so you may
did
have...
you? Did you?
Right, okay.
you're having a big night, aren't you?
Oh, it's a big night. Home run. So, you know, I was going to ask the same question that Teresa did. So I'll make it more of a self-expression than a question. Is the past year or more without less, and with just the Sangha has been, you know, really frustrating and really fruitful for me. And I'd like for others to look at it the same way, not necessarily be frustrated, but to look at it at a time of like great possibility for us individually. I don't necessarily mean for the Sangha. Personally, I've gotten a lot out of this past year or two. And that has not necessarily included less during that time. So, and we'll get a teacher and then it'll change again.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Another, you know, David Chadwick asks Suzuki Roshi. He says, you know, you're a great teacher and I've really been trying, but I just don't get it. Could you kind of sum it up for me? could you make it easier? And Suzuki Roshi's answer is everything changes. That is Suzuki Roshi's summary of all the teachings of Buddhism. Everything changes. Up here in Arcata Zen was started by Maile Scott. And then Maile got cancer and died. And so Arcata Zen was without a teacher for quite a long time. And it's my understanding that Arcata Zen became very good at being run by the students. And it's my understanding that when they finally got a teacher, it was kind of hard for the teacher to crack that nut because they knew what they were doing by then. Berkeley Zen Center, you know, about Alan Sanaki, Alan's doing pretty well now, but Alan, the abbot, was suddenly, catastrophically, he was in ICU for weeks. Didn't think he was going to make it. Looks like he's going to make it. Berkeley Zen is being run by the seniors. It's a slight, I don't know if it's a different story, because the seniors there are so well-trained, and Berkeley Zen Center is such a smooth-running machine. But I find that very interesting, and I wonder if groups of seniors running the local centers, again, what do we need the local center for? We really have to ask that question. What need is being filled? Could be you don't need a teacher. I don't know. But when you get one, be nice to them. They should be nice to you. You should be nice to them. It's fraught. It is fraught. I'm really, I love being just on my own. The main arguments I have are with myself. Anybody else? Anything else? Is that enough?
I heard a Mother Teresa quote, and it was today, and it was, we can't all do great things, but we can do small things with great love. Oh. Isn't that beautiful?
That's beautiful. Yeah, that's right.
Before your talk.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah. Yeah, bringing intention, bringing our practice to this business of saving all beings, no matter how irritating they are, we're going to save them. By just watching, by not trying to control and never ignoring. Philip, one more little thing, just a quickie.
Just a quick comment, if you will, please, about the distinction between going as deep as we want to in our practice versus as deep as we need to.
Philip, that is not a quick question. let me say, I think desperation has always been my greatest teacher. And if you can be a part of a sitting group, sit once a week, be a part of a group, hear some teachings. Great. If you need more, if you too feel the desperation, so tired of wearing that defensive shell, that you're willing to, again, let your heart be broken open, then that's available too.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's kanondo.org.